Well, it's time now to take a look at the week that was in federal politics. Let's take a listen.
There are conversations. That's about all I can say at this point.
Are you involved in any of these talks with some of the independents?
Well, no, not in terms of setting up a new party.
I can tell you what this will do to future investment if the government doesn't right the ship very quickly. It will fall off a cliff. We need gas. We need it for every single thing we do.
I think everyone contributes to their own downfall, if you like, in some ways, and I'm sure I have contributed to this in some ways.
I have no confidence that you don't have an actual or perceived
so
bias. Even
you,
your close cultural identity, your
Senator.
Close cultural identity with defence, you wear the uniform, you go to functions.
It's really not helpful.
An anti-corruption commission is not about a popcorn moment for the public.
I mean, small businesses, startups, ETFs, crypto shares, everything gets hit with this great big tax on everything.
That legislation is about three things. It's about cutting taxes for workers, it's about making it easier to buy
what
a first home, and
up.
It's about better aligning the tax treatment of labour and assets, Mr Speaker.
And what we're doing as part of tax reform is increasing the integrity of the system. So people shouldn't expect big changes.
The arrogance of this government and this Prime Minister to not take this to an election.
So we've got the guts to go to an election. The question is, does the Prime Minister...
I will confirm investigations are continuing in all recent adult female returnees who spent time in internally displaced persons camps in Syria.
The Commonwealth is seeking more than $2 billion in damages to recover significant past and future expenses incurred. Let me be clear, this is the largest legal claim ever brought by the Commonwealth.
Suitable employment must be the goal for every participant.
Speaker, there was an interjection made by the Leader of the Opposition which was way beyond unparliamentary at the start of that answer.
To assist the House, I withdraw.
It wasn't picked up by the mics, but it was picked up by the papers. That's some of the sounds of the week in federal politics. Well, our Friday panel has assembled here in our studio in Parliament House in Canberra. Anna Henderson is Chief Political Correspondent at SBS World News. Anna, lovely to have you back.
Lovely to be here, Sally.
Matthew Knott is the Foreign Affairs and National Security Correspondent with The Age and Sydney Morning Herald. Matthew, welcome to you.
Hi, Sally. It has been a big week when you listen back to
I know,
all
it's
that.
Actually, it's quite informative, actually. You think, what has happened this week? Stephanie Boris is our very own political correspondent. Stephanie, welcome back.
Hello again.
Steffi, I'll start with you. The public debate on proposed changes to negative gearing, capital gains tax, capital gains tax and trusts. Has the government lost that public debate?
It's getting confusing, isn't it? They came out on budget night wanting to focus on housing supply, helping the younger generations. And now the focus and the conversation is around businesses and what changes they'll be subjected to as a result of the reforms to the capital gains tax discount. You saw during question time this week that got rowdy and out of hand at certain times. The government was always wanting to, and their questions were around housing. They were trying to bring it back to housing. But of course, the coalition was wanting to go down the tax path, specifically around the capital gains tax discount. So yes, I think they have lost the ability to focus the way they want to. Part of that is because this is complicated policy. Part of it is to do with social media as well. And also we are hearing very loudly from sectors that are angry at these changes. So I think they've been almost louder and more effective than the coalition has with trying to, you know, pinpoint the government on these changes.
Anna, we've also had a couple of premiers weigh in, Labor premiers.
Look, there's been concerns raised in different parts of the country, whether it's on the mining front, whether it's, you know, in New South Wales around how this is going to unfold. And I think that does speak to the fact that the politics of this is tricky if you've got Labor premiers in particular who are reading a different mood in the electorate to the federal government. But I think it's also the case that federally, Labor is pretty confident that as time goes by, this is going to settle. And the majority of Australians who are collecting, you know, wages and salaries are going to think about the fact that they pay such a high rate of tax compared to people who have assets and other ways of making money, and that, you know, the majority will then decide this is ended up in a good place. But we don't know if that is how this will unfold because of that question about whether Labor really understands aspiration in Australia and whether people expect that things that were available to previous generations or other people should be available to them to make a nest egg, to increase the money they have as they get older. So it's a real process of wait and see. Labor's banking on that. The Prime Minister's still signalling, even in that introductory segment, the changes are going to be quite minimal, but there is a lot of pressure for more. And I think the coalition's been pretty successful in kind of piggybacking off what's happening in that social media space to try and get a little bit more traction.
We've seen some different tactics from the opposition during the week, Matthew. Yesterday it was to call for an election, that the government hadn't taken this proposal to the people and it should immediately. There was some pushback from the government during question time saying, basically, why would you want an election as the opposition? What did you make of all of that?
At one point I was getting flashbacks when we were talking about suspending standing orders back to more the Tony Abbott days. But, of course, the parliamentary numbers are very different. It's not like Parliament's on a knife edge in the lower house and it could change. So some of the parliamentary tactics from the opposition haven't been successful. They've been much more successful, as Anna was saying, on social media. I've even seen some going around. Andrew Bragg has been very active on social media and some clips about, you know, the amount of shares that young people have and whether the government's figures have been correct on that. So I think within Parliament, not so successful, but out in the world of the internet, that they're doing better at combating the government. And One Nation and Pauline Hanson is very successful in that space as well.
Yeah, I think there was one point where yesterday the coalition was all ready to hold up some signage.
That's right.
Labor lies.
The speaker was onto it.
And then it was quietly put into drawers and it sort of felt like it was a bit of a moment that described how the coalition's been trying to get traction and then at times it hasn't quite landed.
Yeah, the speaker has looked rather frustrated this week. It's been fairly rowdy. On Radio National Breakfast, our Friday political panel is here. Anna Henderson from SBS, Matthew Knott from the Age and Sydney Morning Herald and our own Stephanie Boris. Anna, the Attorney General has launched legal action against 3M over so-called toxic forever chemicals found in firefighting foam. It's a $2 billion claim. This is the largest kind of legal action launched by the Commonwealth.
It's massive, isn't it? And I think there's a lot of different communities across the country who've been waiting for the government to do more. And yesterday was a big moment. We heard from representatives of some of the communities that have been so worried about the impacts of these chemicals with a sense of relief. The company says it will defend itself through the legal process and it has really pushed back on the idea that it was directly selling in Australia, and so defence was going on with this process well after it had stopped being able to sell into Australia. So at the same time, I think Labor has also worked out that this is really important to communities and that they needed to do something. But I don't think that the community members we've spoken to think it's enough. They want more to be done on the health side as well.
And Steffi, what's the government hoping to achieve here? Is this about cost recovery for cleaning these sites or sending message on public health? We were hearing from Independent Senator for Victoria, Lydia Thorpe, earlier. She's really pushing the health aspect and the costs of that physically for those people who have been affected, but also for the health system.
Yeah, I think as Anna said, the government is wanting to respond to community concerns, but the Attorney General, Michelle Rowland, has made it clear that the purpose of this claim is to recover significant past and future expenses that the Commonwealth has incurred in investigating managed contamination. So focusing on the environmental aspect, they're not focusing on the health aspect, as you were saying there. And that's what's been already raised by Senator Lydia Thorpe. It has been raised by members in these communities. So that's a whole other element that hasn't really yet been addressed by the government.
Matthew, on a separate issue, another cohort of women and children linked to ISIS arrived back in Sydney this week. I think some arrived in Melbourne as well. One woman's been charged separately. Is this an ongoing headache for the government?
Well, I think they'll be glad that besides the woman with an exclusion order who's very much stuck in Syria, that this has been done, you know, that in terms of this whole drama that's been stretching for years and so many movements back and forth on it, that they'll be glad that it's coming to an end in that way. And the fascinating thing about this week is that the woman who was charged arrived back in September.
That's right.
And has only been charged now. And the clear implication from the statement of the AFP commissioner was that the recent return a few weeks ago of that group of women, some of whom were arrested, has led to more information. Police are interviewing these women when they come back and piecing it all together. She said that they still have 8 active investigations underway into this, clearly saying this isn't the end, there could be more arrests coming. So I don't think it's been a disaster for the government, because the authorities have seemed to be on it, you know, in terms of people are being charged and they're being held accountable. So yeah, I think that's where we're at.
And Matthew, the Attorney General assured the public yesterday that the families who are in the community are being monitored. Did the government have any other options here?
No, not really. There's still an ongoing debate that's been going on in Senate estimates about this issue of the Passport Act, and could the government have cancelled these women's passports. I think the big issue there is whether you're looking backwards in terms of holding people accountable for what they've done in the past, which is what the criminal justice system is about, and the Passport Act, which is thinking more forward-looking. Are these people going to be a threat in the future as opposed to what they've done in the past? And I think the feeling is mostly that these are people who've made very bad decisions or been lured into a bad place, but it's not so much about the future risk as what happened years ago.
There's also the diplomatic side of this as well, though, which is that a number of these women have been trying to get back to Australia, and the Syrian authorities have been making pretty clear behind the scenes, along with the Kurdish authorities, that countries need to be responsible for their citizens. Like, there has been a push for countries across the world to bring back women who are in these camps and deal with them in their own legal system, rather than keeping them in Syria, where they're in the responsibility of Kurdish authorities for years on end.
And I'd say the new fight now brewing is between the New South Wales government and the federal government over funding. We've heard the New South Wales government say they want more support from the federal government to monitor.
It's expensive.
Yeah,
it takes a lot of money for a small number of people.
We're talking millions of dollars,
yeah,
aren't we?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Another story which developed this week was speculation around Teal MPs uniting under a Teal flag to form their own party. It was on, it was off, some were in, some were out. What did you make of all of this, Steph?
It's still on and off at the moment, right? It's still TBC. I think it does raise questions about, can you call yourself an independent if you end up making a group of party members?
Is this all about funding?
I think that's a big part of it, yeah. And is there also a question of, you know, going into the future, if I don't know whether really should predict the future with politics, but, you know, we've always mainly been a two-party system, and now we're talking about One Nation. We've got the Greens, we've got a number of independents. Does it benefit some independents to become a party if we're going to have to form government in future years with a number of different groups? Like, it could get messy. Maybe that's part of it too, but definitely funding an element of it.
So, Anna, when we're talking about funding, this is the electoral funding changes that were introduced by the government. Arguably, they favour parties over individuals. How much do you think this is at play?
It's a big factor because all these independents who have committed to their electorates are sitting around the table saying, how are we going to, you know, make ourselves known for the next election? How are we going to organise? They are already loosely engaged in
developing
policy.
There's a lot of communication.
There's a lot of joint press conferences.
The staff members seem to help each other out.
Correct. But, you know, as one of the, you know, people who were in discussions around this put to me, we could just call ourselves the independents as a party, which, you know, has its own challenges in the sales pitch, but say that everyone's going to vote on conscience, that we've all got our separate communities, but that we had to do this so that we could get the funding to continue to promote ourselves. So we'll see what happens. I don't think this is over yet.
But also a matter of influence as well, because people come to Parliament House and they're very excited, but now with the huge majority of the government in the lower house, these people want to have influence, they want to get things done, and sometimes the Senate is really where the action is happening. So they're trying to think how, with this huge Labor majority that could exist through for several years, how they can make a difference here rather than just, you know, be ticking off boxes as the government gets their way.
Now, the clock has beaten us yet again. I want to thank our panel this morning. Anna Henderson, not only Chief Political Correspondent at SBS World News, but part of a group of outstanding journalists that hail from the town of Manila in New South Wales.
Absolutely. Every
home
time
of the big
must
fish.
Be mentioned.
I know at least three. I don't know if there's more.
Shout out to everyone in Manila.
Good morning to everyone listening in Manila. Matthew Knott, Foreign Affairs and National Security Correspondent with The Age and Sydney Morning Herald. Thank you so much coming in this morning. And Stephanie Boris, Radio National Breakfast Political Correspondent. Thank you.
Thank you.